The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. As we head into Hour 3, a delight. This is fast becoming one of the most popular hours of our show, hours of the week, actually, where we are privileged, honored, and delighted to welcome into our studios Rabbi Pinchas Alush. Rabbi Alush is the head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah in Scottsdale, T-E-F-I-L-L-A-H, on Shea Boulevard, where he continually reminds everyone is welcome, anyone is welcome, religious or not, Jewish or not, observant or not. And he hosts the Rabbi Alush podcast, heard on Apple Podcasts. Did I spell your last name? A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. I do that because sometimes people ask how to spell one's last name, including Leibson. Rabbi, welcome back. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure being back, as always.
Tell us an update on your son, Yisrael Mordechai Chaim.
Well, thank you. And thank you for always opening up this hour with asking about my son. I really appreciate it. As many of your listeners know, he's a paratrooper in the IDF. Right now, actually, he has a little break. This weekend, he was sent home to his home in Herzliya, Israel. He's doing fine. He's staying strong. He's on the border right now of Gaza. And together with his unit, they go in and out for very selective operations. But I thank everyone for continuing to pray for him and for all of the good people's safety and security.
Of course, absolutely. We'd like to have you here, by the way, Fridays, just to kind of move everyone a little bit closer into a Sabbath mindset, a Shabbat mindset or a Sabbath mindset. I wonder if there's a little bit more vibration in Israel right now. Reports today have been based on something out of the Wall Street Journal and something President Biden reiterated from the White House today. Reports are that Iran is considering, there is a very serious piece of intelligence that Iran might be considering an attack on Israel. No one really knows what that in and of itself means. But when you have the Wall Street Journal reporting it and the president validating that their intelligence is credible, that this could happen, and the president said sooner rather than later, you wonder, are the people of Israel in Israel just a little bit more on edge, or is this more run-of-the-mill?
I think it's run-of-the-mill.
Yeah.
Look, and I know this because I spoke to friends in Israel this past week. Just yesterday, I spoke to family members. I spoke to my own son this morning, and no one seems to care or worry.
Yeah.
Maybe because it is a combination of two intelligences.
Yeah.
The human intelligence,
yeah.
I think that Israel is strong enough, both on the offensive and the defensive, to protect itself, especially from Iranian threats. I mean, I've been training for this for the past 20 years. And also because of divine intelligence,
yeah.
What I like to call.
Yeah.
They do have this tremendous element of faith,
yeah,
that carries them through and continues to make them so positive and optimistic.
Yeah. You wonder, I mean, you've lived there and you have family that lives there. You wonder about a people that's always in a threat of war. And for a while, there was a major war every decade since its founding. And what that does to a people's psyche. And one has to think, but for the religious anchoring and the religious element of that society, it would probably be a very much more agitated society. You know, I think of something I was, you know, Karl Marx wanted to get rid of religion. Religion was the opiate of the masses, according to Karl Marx, because the religious were more calm, more settled, more just. One might even argue more contented and happy. And the contented and happy and the normal and the just don't engage in revolution. The point is, religion has a, when done correctly, or at least when done in sync with what God would ask of you, be it, you know, Christian or Jewish, Christianity or Judaism, it perfects man and perhaps makes them a little more grounded. Mm. To wit, have you ever met more grounded people than Orthodox women? I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
They're some of the most grounded people in the world, especially at the teenage level. They don't seem to have the kinds of other angst, depression, anxieties that a lot of 12 and 13 and 15-year-old young girls in society generally have, the kind that we've been reading about in the studies that have been coming out about teen mental illness. You don't see it as much in Orthodox Jewish girls.
That's right. You see them.
They're very well adjusted. Sorry, I'm going on.
No, very, very well said. I mean, speaking of that segment, but speaking of the general idea, you're right. They are very anchored. They are aligned with themselves, so to speak. And therefore, they are not too bothered or fazed by outside circumstances, even the big global issues that we face, like Iran. I think it's a tremendous lesson for each of us. You know, one of my favorite lines from the Jewish Talmud is that a person should always be as flexible as a bamboo stick and not as hard or as firm as a cedar tree.
Mm.
Because the inclination is to be like a cedar tree, you know, to build our strength outwardly and to almost put on a face that, oh, I'm so strong, nothing is going to get to me. The problem with cedar trees is when a storm comes, they fall. Bamboo sticks may not seem as strong outwardly, but they are tremendously strong inwardly. Their roots are deep. They are truly anchored. And when a storm comes, the bamboo stick never falls. And in many ways, it's a strong reminder that if we are anchored and centered in the divine and in his values, then no storm in life can ever topple us. If we are not, even though we may be cedar trees on the outside, then we become much more fragile.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, there is a Christian element of this thinking, and I wonder how much in agreement it is with Jewish thought. I often will quote a theologian and novelist named C.S. Lewis, who's a Christian theologian and a novelist. Almost everyone has heard of him. And a speech he gave on how to live in an atomic age. And his basic message to the students was, don't freak out. Can I read you a portion and
sure.
get your sense of how you would address, agree, or dissent? The first action to be taken in living in an atomic age is to pull ourselves together. If we are all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let the bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things. Praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep, and thinking about bombs. They may break our bodies, but they need not dominate our minds. Something about what you said seems to comport very much with that sentiment as well.
Very much so. And I love his words because they also relate, maybe subtly, but they relate to yet another problem that cedar trees have, and that is that they really never live in the moment. They're always afraid by what will be. The future shackles them.
Yeah.
And therefore, they don't go out and play tennis and do all these exercises.
Bathing the children is the
bathing
one.
The children.
Most people remember that one. The image of that,
yes.
More so than a pint and darts,
that's
although
right.
That's the one I relate more to. But bathing the children is the line that people...
that's
it's
right.
It's such an innocent concept.
Yeah, very innocent. Very, very vital also, essential.
Yeah.
But that's right. When we are grappled by what will be, then we don't bathe our children.
Yeah.
And the present then becomes completely obliterated.
Yeah.
That's the danger.
Yeah.
But when we know that God needs something of us right now, and that the future will be the future, if I'm able to embrace truly the present, then I'm anchored.
Someone once somewhere said, concerning yourself about or worrying about the future does not remove the anxiety of tomorrow. It removes the joy of today.
Mm.
Yeah, something along those lines. I may have butchered it a little bit.
No, very, very well said. And that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's not our business in a way.
Right. It's God's department.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
ours.
It's God's business, not ours. Rabbi Pinchas Solution, I will come back and we'll be getting into this week's Torah portion, a biblical portion that people read, Jews read across the world. It's in Leviticus 12 that we'll be, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest, the Rabbi Alush podcast, Congregation Beth Tefillah, and theological resident and scholar at the Seth Leibson Show.
Oh, please.
New title. You've been here about a year. You've got tenure now. That was Steve Miller's version of bathing the children and having a pint and playing with darts, dancing with his wife. That's a nice, innocent thought, too. You know, come on, darling, put a pretty dress on. We're going to go out tonight. Dance, dance, dance. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Leviticus 12:2, Tazria, which means conceives.
That's right.
And it's where we learn about dermatology.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about on the way into work, because it gets into all these skin conditions today, Rabbi, you and I could probably make a fortune if we wanted to on an idea that I'm going to share with just you right now, which
just,
is a series
me
of
and
books.
All your
just you. A series of books. I don't think this exists. I think it's not a half bad idea. A series of books designed for each medical expertise based on what the Bible says about it.
Mm.
So, for instance, probably the thickest one would be the neurologist or the cardiologist. Mm-hmm. Probably the brain and the heart, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But Tazria would be for dermatologists. We learn a lot about skin conditions here.
Mm.
A surface thing about a deep thing, though, isn't it?
Yes. It's fascinating, by the way, because just to relate to your brilliant idea.
It's not bad, right?
Not bad at all. And in fact, Maimonides...
Yeah.
Started an idea like that. He has a book that's unknown, unfortunately, called Pirkei Moshe, which means the chapters of Moses.
And he was a physician.
He was a physician,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
In which he writes the biblical remedies, and remedies that, of course, he himself added through his own experience, to many of these diseases. So it's a fascinating book that I think applies to until this very day. But you're right. This book or this portion speaks of dermatology. And we find all sorts of rashes and skin diseases, that including leprosy, that would befall people, especially because they slandered others or gossiped, reminding us that we have to be extremely careful with our speech, because our speech can not only harm the others, but it can harm ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speech can destroy other people. And by developing this leprosy almost miraculously when we spoke gossip, God was reminding us, well, just as you're destroying others, you're destroying yourself too.
Jonathan Sacks, the rabbi I like to read, former, now since deceased, chief rabbi of England, wrote, Judaism is a religion of words and silences, speaking and listening, communicating and attending. God created the universe by words, and he said... And there was. And we create the social universe by words, by the promises with which we bind ourselves to meet our obligations to others. God's revelation at Sinai was words. You heard the sound of words, but saw no form. There was no voice. Every other ancient religion had its monuments of bricks and stones. Jews exiled had only words. Listen, Israel. Hear, O Israel, is the most perhaps prominent prayer we all say. For God is invisible, and we make no icons. We can't see God, we can't smell God, we can't touch God, we can't taste God. All we can do is listen in the hope of hearing God. In Judaism, listening is the high religious obligation.
Hmm. Even higher than speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, means listening, and therefore it's the most important prayer. I would, of course, Rabbi Sacks, as always, is so poignant and so relevant. But if I may add just one layer of depth to this, and that is because when we listen, speaking of listening as the highest sense or as the highest level of communication, when we listen, what we are doing is that we are involving everything else in our body. When we see, we might not be involving everything else. When we taste, it's just the mouth. When you listen, you have to, if you are truly listening, you have to listen with your mind, you have to listen with your heart. You even have to listen with your soul. And therefore, there is nothing greater than listening.
We know we can speak ill, and it's forbidden, usually. Can we listen ill? Are there things we aren't supposed to be listening to and putting ourselves in the presence of? I would presume so.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, speaking of these laws of gossip, mm-hmm. the prohibition is not just on the person speaking gossip. It's also on the person listening to the gossip, because you're enabling gossip mm-hmm. by listening mm-hmm. to it. So that's one classic example of a type of listening that is completely forbidden. There are also types of listening that are not maybe completely forbidden, but they are still toxic for you.
Yeah.
And that's listening, for example, not to negative words, but maybe to words that are completely vain.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to listen to information that is vain. Mm-hmm. Is it maybe toxic for me? Or maybe I should be filling this time and filling my ears with something more meaningful.
Yeah.
Something more soulful.
Yeah. It's worth thinking about. You know, in the Orthodox community, there's probably no one who didn't know who Joe Lieberman was, who passed away a couple weeks ago. He went on a big campaign in the late 90s with a few others, Rick Santorum, William Bennett, Dolores Tucker, who was a civil rights activist. And their big campaign, it wasn't for public censorship, so to speak, governmental censorship, but to the Hollywood record and music executives who were throwing around rap lyrics, selling rap lyrics, making millions and millions of dollars off cop killing, female beating, rape inspiring music. And I always thought that that was very interesting that he took part in that, in trying to shame these execs not to make money off this sort of thing, that it wasn't good for kids to hear that stuff.
Mm.
And one of them asked an executive, might have been Joe Lieberman, asked one of the executives, do you play these songs, records in those days, do you play these records at home? He says, oh, no, I never would do that.
Mm. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, the Talmud points out that the ears are the only limbs in our body, organs of our body, that work one way.
Yeah.
Huh. They take in. They don't take out.
Yeah.
Mouths take in, take out. Noses, too. The ears only take in. And therefore, we have to be even more careful with what goes in, because what goes in through those ears will affect, indeed, our entire being. Whether it's songs that are just full of violence or improper,
low things, let's say.
Exactly,
yeah.
Improper subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it is, like you just said, you know, just vain things.
Yeah. And thus would constitute our series of biblical interpretation for the ENT medical profession, the ear, nose, and throat doctors. We're writing the book as we speak.
Because what goes in won't go out through those ears.
That's the point.
With the mouths, yes.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful.
That's the point. I want to talk about, actually, the mouth and its connection to this portion when we come back to Tazria, skin disease, and gossip. And the laws of Kashrut being so closely related to this, I think there's a connection there, too. We can explore the laws of kosher, what you're supposed to eat, which was last week's portion. Now we're here about what we are supposed to say or not say. Rabbi Alush and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest. We only play nurturing music here, as you notice.
I love
Rabbi.
It. Only, I love it.
Only nurturing. And if it's instrumental, a trumpet like that, you can know I selected it, because once in a while they let me select my own music on the show with my name on it. No resentment meant there. the punishments for gossip, gossiping, speaking ill, lashon hara. How do you translate that? Evil tongue?
That's right. It's literally translated as the evil tongue.
Yeah. And that's Yiddish?
It's Hebrew.
Hebrew.
Lashon is tongue, and hara is evil.
Okay. Very Yetzer hara, Yetzer tov.
That's right.
Good inclination,
right.
Bad inclination,
exactly.
Evil inclination. Mm-hmm. One of my other favorite rabbis, also recently deceased, also a physician, Rabbi Twersky, he attributes to a great saintly rabbi of yore, the Chofetz Chaim, saying that the juxtaposition of this week's portion of the Torah, the Bible, to that of the previous portion where we learned the rules of kashrut, of eating kosher, of what you are forbidden to eat and what you are allowed to eat, is to teach us that people who may be meticulously careful about what goes into their mouths should be equally as scrupulous about what comes out of their mouths.
Very good. Very good. And here, you have that part of the body that both takes in and takes out, unlike the ears, as we just spoke about.
Yeah.
But you're right. And I think that in many, many ways, they are connected, what goes in and what comes out. Mm-hmm. You know, usually, and I don't just mean food, but I also just mean what we listen to and what we see through our eyes. You know, eyes also serve that double function. We absorb, but we also project. But they are very much connected because they are all rooted. All of these choices that we make of what to bring in and what to take out are all rooted in our approach to life altogether. What will we focus on? Will we focus on mundane, trivial aspects of life, or will we focus on the important, big ideas? You know, one of my favorite quotes is Roosevelt's quote on the difference between average minds and great minds. You know, I'm sure you know that quote. Many of your listeners know it. But yes. Small minds speak about people. Average minds speak about events. Great minds speak about ideas. The question is, how am I wired? Am I wired towards ideas? Yeah. If I am, then what I take in and take out will be much more meaningful. If I'm wired towards just people, then I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Then I'm in trouble.
It's not totally proportional in a relationship, but it might be close. Last week you said, in thinking about the laws of what you're allowed to eat, take in, you invoked the popular aphorism, you are what you eat. And I was thinking, can you do that with you are what you say? Maybe a little bit, not fully, but maybe importantly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In fact, one of the great Hasidic masters, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Morgenstern, would say that.
Oh, okay.
You are what you say. He actually says that in the context of Passover.
Uh-huh.
Because during Passover, we tell the story of Passover. And then in that Haggadah, in the story, we speak of the four sons. And the way they're introduced to us is the wise man, what does he say? The wicked man, what does he say? And Rabbi Menachem Mendel Morgenstern says, the wise man, we can almost paraphrase or add a comma in the what does he say. But the wise son, what is the wise son? He says.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what he says and you'll know if he's wise.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the wicked. Look at what he says and you'll know if he's wicked.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, if you want to know a person, look at what he says.
Yeah. And hold them to it too, I think. Yeah. I mean, that is the point of a vow, isn't it? I was having this discussion about marital vows the other day and how unserious they are now.
Mm. That's right.
They used to be a serious thing. It was a promise to God, really.
That's right. And it's connected to the general problem. We used to take our words seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
The spoken word.
Man of his word used to be a thing. You don't hear that anymore.
No,
yeah.
No, not at all, which is unfortunate because our words really are who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And if our words don't mean anything, maybe it can also mean that we don't mean it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If you can't count on what someone says or promises or swears to in an oath, let us say, or a vow, what can you count on? And maybe nothing.
That's right.
Maybe nothing. There's an old Latin legal aphorism, one who lies in one thing will lie in all things. It's an interesting concept. I want to relate it to mourning, if we can.
Sure.
Defamation or slander or gossip, to how there might be a connection to mourning as well. Rabbi Pinchas Solution, I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest, Allouche, head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah. Beth means house. Tefillah means prayer, T-E-F-I-L-L-A-H. It's on Shea Boulevard. All are welcome, observant or not, Jewish or not. In this portion, Leviticus 12 forward, that we will be reading, everyone will be reading from or learning from tomorrow in synagogues across the world, one of the interesting things we learn, it's about skin disfigurations that are based as punishments for slander, gossip. When you get a skin disfiguration, we are told you have to go through 7 days of isolation. It's an interesting notion. Why 7 days of isolation? I saw some were comparing it to a practice in Judaism based on the word seven, Shiva, which is what people do when they mourn.
Mm. Very, very well. Yeah, it's an interesting comparison, and we can develop that idea. But the basic reason is because what we're saying to the person, look, you're a destructive force right now in society. So also, take a time out.
Right.
It's like that old punishment. I don't know if I agree with it, but when students wouldn't behave, go to the corner.
Yeah.
Take a time out.
Yeah.
Rethink your role in society and make it constructive, please, after you come back. So that's the simple reason. The deeper reason is because we want a person to not just take a distance from society, but also to begin to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the problem is that you act too quickly, you speak too quickly. You don't think before you say anything.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because you are not anchored, as we were speaking about before. You're not aligned with yourself. So go take 7 days, meditate, maybe insert some values in your life, maybe root yourself with something more meaningful and divine, and then come back and you'll treat your words differently. So that's the deeper reason.
Yes. And we get one further connection. As we read further in a little bit, we learn from Scripture, from Leviticus, that the person being punished, it says his clothes shall be rent,
mm-hmm.
right? And the hair of his head shall go loose. That they have to isolate to stop, stand in the corner, if you will, city of refuge maybe of sorts,
mm-hmm.
but also has to act like they've killed,
right.
Or someone has been killed, or removed from the community for a while to reflect on what has been done. There's something about that. It's one of the sins, gossip, I've read in tons of Jewish lore, that is one of the hardest to overcome. There's a lot of different comparisons. The pillowcase and the feathers is a famous one, if
right.
you want to do that.
That's right. Yeah, where someone went to a rabbi and said, look, I regret speaking negatively about someone else. The rabbi says, go back home and take your feather pillow and slice it open and let the feathers blow in the wind. That's what he does, and he goes back to the rabbi. He said, I did exactly what you want me to do. And the rabbi says, well, now go gather those feathers.
Each and every one.
That's right. He says, it's impossible. He says, well, that's what your words did. They too spread very very strongly and very quickly.
Widely. And,
in all sorts of directions.
That you don't intend even.
That's right. They have a ripple effect.
Be very careful.
That you can't even see. And now go gather them, which means, you know, you'll never be able to truly repent.
Yeah.
It's a very strong and maybe even very despairing thought. But it should warn us all about the power of speech and how destructive it can be. The Talmud goes as far as saying that when a person gossips, he's killing three people. Who? The speaker, the person himself. The person whom he's speaking about.
Yep.
And the listener.
Yeah. And truth is not, excuse me, if I understand it correctly, truth is not a defense.
No, truth is not a defense.
Even if it's true but negative, that does not make it right. It's not like the laws of slander here in
exactly.
common law. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be able to think a little bit further.
Yeah.
What is that truth going to do?
Yeah.
What ripple effect is it going to have?
Yeah.
And if it's not going to have a positive one or a constructive one, then just don't say it.
Yeah. I got very offended at a business enterprise last week, and I wanted to talk about it on the radio and, you know, shame them. And I decided I wasn't going to do – I decided against it and never named them by name or anything like that. Because it seems to me, and you and I probably know too many examples of small businesses doing their damned – doing their very best, that employ a lot of people who work very hard and have a lot of stress, particularly in the food industry, I would say, but not exclusively. And maybe it's just too easy to affect them in a negative way by that. And maybe it doesn't help. Maybe it actually hurts the community to do things like that.
Yes.
It may make me feel good for 5 minutes, but it might do lasting damage.
Right. And the question then becomes, if we might fine-tune this.
Yeah.
Why am I speaking gossip?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is a very, very distant exception of when you can speak gossip. And that is if you are trying to avoid further destruction upon society, upon other people.
So there is a justification
here. So there might be a justification. Yep. if it is done in a very surgical way and you know that it is indeed going to prevent harm and destruction in this world.
Okay.
So if someone, for example, robbed me, I'm allowed to say, hey, don't do business with this guy.
Yeah.
I don't think that he's changed his ways.
Yeah.
And that will be saving a person from
If someone
from
abuses children, you might not want to keep your tongue.
That's right. And then gossip is allowed because there is a value that trumps that.
Yeah. Are you obligated to warn people? Probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Unless you know for sure that this person has really changed his ways.
Right. Bill, you and I stumble around a quote that seems to be floating over this whole thing. And it's something like, watch or be careful of your thoughts. Your thoughts become words.
Margaret Thatcher, I think.
Is it Thatcher? That's watch your words. That sounds right. Your words become actions. Watch your actions. Your actions become character. Watch your character becomes your destiny. Something like that.
That's right.
That seems to unite everything here.
Very well said. That's right.
Stick around for one more short segment.
Yes.
Rabbi Pinchas Solution. I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Solution ends the week with us whenever he's in town. We are honored and privileged that he does so. A lot of people are hearing about beginning to get ready for Passover. Do you want to say a word or two about it?
Yes, sure. So Passover begins in the evening of April 22nd. It's an eight-day holiday year in America and across the world. Passover really celebrates the grand exodus from Egypt 3,336 years ago. But we are not just celebrating that which happened in the past. Passover is also about celebrating that which can happen in the present. Because it's interesting to note that the word for Egypt, which is where our ancestors fled from and finally faced freedom, is Mitzrayim in Hebrew. Mitzrayim does not just mean Egypt. It also means limitations.
Hmm.
And in many ways, to re-experience and re-celebrate Passover fully each and every year, we have to come out of our own limitations. And therefore, I would really recommend everyone, I do that with my family, with my congregants and many others, that they pick one limitation, one bad habit, one addiction, one broken relationship, one thing that really needs repair or needs somehow...
Something that's been limiting you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And something that needs a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And make sure that you come out of that Egypt this year, because then you'll be able to truly celebrate Passover in the best of ways. And as our ancestors did 3,000 years ago, you too will then set yourself free.
Nice. Because we can build our own Egypts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the notion.
And we can, you know...
We can build our own
We can build
slaves,
our own, but I don't blame
slavery.
Just people. I blame life altogether.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life also imposes on us all sorts of Egypt.
Sure. Well
and
put.
It's our task, really, to release ourselves from those Egypts, especially when we are asked to set ourselves free, especially when we're about to celebrate Passover.
This doesn't fit perfectly here to close in our last minute, but it was a thought you inspired, and something tells me it would be wrong for me not to say it for some reason, even though it's not about me. It's a little bit. When you were talking about the kids having to stand in the corner, I was reading an interview in the Jewish Historical Society with my dad's mom, my grandma, and she had two boys, my dad and his brother. And the interviewer asked my grandma to tell a story about something that indicates the character of these boys. What one story do you remember from their youth? And she said when he was in first grade, the girl sitting next to him had polio and her legs were in braces and was punished to stand in the closet for laughing out loud or speaking out of turn. And my dad rose his hand and said, because of her leg braces, can I go stand in there for her?
Wow.
I had to do that when you...
That's beautiful.
There's a reason that had to come out.
I'll tell you why. Because that's true Passover.
That's Passover.
That's Passover. But making not just coming out of our own limits, but helping others come out of their limits too.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.